grandparents for more than 14 years, I've come to know my grandmother, which we call her Oma, very well. So first, I want to thank her for agreeing to help me with my assignment in Alabama history. I know you've been in college when my mother was in red. You're in your late 30s, but you excelled. And I know you chose education after working as a labor secretary for many years. Okay. We've had this celebration in our school since I was enrolled. Do you remember when it began?
Well, as you grow older, it seems that certain events in your lifetime that affect the world, the country, and the city and neighborhood remain quite vivid in our minds. I can recall exactly what I was doing at different times, such as the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor, which was the start of World War II, the telegrams my family received periodically concerning the deaths of relatives and brother-in-laws, my brother being captured and was a prisoner of war in Tokyo at the age of 18, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy. These are all memories and some tragedies, and they will remain with me as well as the beginning of desegregation as we now know it.
What does desegregation mean to you, and what does it exactly mean?
Well, basically, desegregation means to me that no race of people shall be prohibited from any institution, especially public, which involves all schools and the military, since they are dependent on money that they receive from the government in order to function. I know when desegregation began, it was way before you were born, in 1954. And we were living in Indianapolis at the time where I grew up. And I remember the case, Brown versus the Board of Education of Topeka, because I've written on it many times in college, and it was passed unanimously by the Supreme Court of our United States, which is the supreme law of our land. They had Civil Rights Acts passed in 1977, and these were the first that they've had since the early days of Reconstruction. I know President Eisenhower ordered federal troops to enforce the school desegregation in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was on the TV news constantly. Riots came about in many other places too, and these were televised on stations throughout the entire country. I remember the feelings I felt in Indianapolis where we were living, and your mother was just completing her junior high school years. Her father stated at the time that the decision was made in 1957, separate but equal, was not fair, and that all schools would have to be integrated. We chaperoned her 8th grade dance that year, and at that time, her father stated, if a black person asked her to dance in the future, he would kill him. This was the feelings of most of our friends at that time, because we had not grown up in an integrated society. Buses, movies, or anything else you can name were all segregated. We didn't socialize with blacks, they didn't live close to us, they didn't go to our schools, and it was a big step. This is the same way most of our friends and relatives felt. No one in any of our families had ever attended schools with another race. They had their own schools. And the city of Indianapolis took no steps to integrate. The surrounding townships made no effort to desegregate until it was forced, as it was in many other parts of the country, but not in the schools that my children attended.
Was the high school my mother and my uncle went to ordered to integrate?
No. Not at all. When your mother graduated, we moved to Gulfport, Mississippi, and that area was talking about desegregating in the future. Several private schools were already built, and they were choosing their students according to race. At that time, most of the talks was centered on the efforts of James Meredith, who was attending the Jackson State College, an all-black school. Meredith had applied for admission to the University of Mississippi the previous year, but his application had been returned to him with his room deposit fee. Members of the law firm for whom I worked were certain Meredith would never be admitted.
However, our minister, a good friend of ours, remained positive that eventually Meredith would become a student at Ole Miss. And Meredith did receive backing from the NAACP and for other civil rights organizations. And the following year, in 1962, the Supreme Court upheld Meredith's right to be admitted to Ole Miss. This was just 10 days before registration, and Ross Barnett addressed the state's television audience several times and pledged Meredith would not be registered. Federal marshals tried to register Meredith four different times, and the government continued the public stand, but failed. On the very next Sunday, Meredith was flown into Oxford secretly and escorted to the campus. With him, more than 100 deputy federal marshals and over 300 U.S. Border Patrol members and just about 100 federal prison guards were with him. Riots occurred in not only in Oxford, but all over Mississippi. President Kennedy ordered federal troops, but the marshals could only use tear gas, and it turned into a shooting war, which left several people dead, and more than 20 marshals had been killed. Meredith did become the first black student to register at Ole Miss, and the entire state of Mississippi was in mourning. The entire scenes had been televised, and some citizens were openly crying, and many remained belligerent. Meredith graduated from Ole Miss the following year, and I can remember it well because he was still constantly guarded at every step he took, on campus and off. Everyone was worn out when it was ended, and there was a good deal of physical destruction evident all over the state.
What happened then?
Well, 6 months later, we moved to Philadelphia, Mississippi. I had never heard of it before. It was a very small town of 5,000 people, not including the Choctaw Indians, who lived on a reservation in Neshoba County, and they were treated about as badly as the black race.
Were you able to continue as a legal secretary with so many years of experience?
No. First of all, there wasn't a large law firm in Philadelphia. I was a transplanted Yankee and not very well received. Most lawyers in the area practiced alone or worked with one of their relatives, and I became very bored. My husband was a professional businessman there, and we were invited to several homes and occasions, and we played bridge with people that had lived there for forever, I think. But I was still bored. But your mother enrolled in a junior college and was commuting back and forth, and it was she who suggested that I enroll with her and go back to school and get some college courses. And her father agreed. But when we drove those 35 miles that morning for me to enroll, I'll never forget the look on the administrator's face. This was years before it was popular for adults to return to the classroom. I was even warned that I would be expected to be in class each week. Classes at that time were Monday through Friday, start beginning at 8 o'clock. There was no talk of desegregation, but enrolling a Yankee was almost as bad to single students than other personnel. I applied for my transcript from the high school I graduated from in Indianapolis, but it was impossible. I telephoned the high school in Indianapolis and was told the closest they could come, that they could ascertain my class rank, was that I was one in the 41 students with an A average. And this was out of 950 seniors in my graduating class. The high school I attended had an enrollment of approximately 4,500 students with 34 buildings on the campus. It was easy to get lost in the crowd, especially since I worked part-time through high school. Tech was larger than the University of Mississippi campus. During the 2 years I spent at East Central Junior College, my daughter was my guide and my friend, especially during those early days when we took our ACT test together. She scored higher in math and science than I, but I scored higher in English and history than she, even though I had completed high school 20 years earlier. But if your mother hadn't taken me by the hand and led me, I would never have had the courage to remain. There was no open talk of integration. Even Meredith and the others were on the Ole Miss campus at the time. Some of the instructors and students did say that integration wouldn't last long, since they had constant protests and fights, and these were ongoing at other schools as well. When your mother decided to return to Indianapolis, I was encouraged by some of the instructors and co-students to remain, since I had proven that I was sincere about returning to school. Although Mississippi news ebbed from the TV screens, the state of Alabama took over the headlines when George Wallace became governor in 1963. He became immediately infamous by declaring, "And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever." Governor Wallace believed these words, as well as many Alabama citizens and most other Southerners. The eyes of the entire nation were focused on Alabama, and they were once on Little Rock, Arkansas, when they integrated several years earlier.
What happened after Governor Wallace made his proclamation?
It didn't take too long for a confrontation when Bull Connor, who was the Commissioner of Public Safety for Birmingham, ordered firefighters to turn their hoses on demonstrators for voting rights. And with this, water slammed the protesters into the building. And just the following month is when George Wallace stood in the doorway of the University of Alabama to prevent admission of two black students. The pictures on national TV remained with segregationists, which encouraged Wallace to run for president. He was very popular in many states, especially the southern states, until he was shot. Later that year, violence caused the death of four little girls in Birmingham when a bomb was thrown at a school in Birmingham, at a church in Birmingham. They were all just schoolgirls. This played over the entire nation. But after that, there were no more hoses because of the nationwide publicity. And even bulldogs were used to keep the blacks away from certain things. But there was a public outcry against violence in Birmingham and the riots.
Were there other states having problems in desegregating schools?
Oh my goodness, yes. Louisiana, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, and other southern states, Los Angeles and Boston and Louisville had rioting, especially when it came to busing students. When I returned to Indianapolis to work during that summer, everyone was being warned to stay off the street as much as possible because of the impending whites and blacks confronting each other more and more. Busing was a major issue in Los Angeles and busing in Boston. Black school children and black teachers were being transported to white schools to meet the requirements ordered by the federal government according to their black and white population.
Did you return to Mississippi?
Yes, I did, for I wanted to complete East Central. I wanted that AA degree. I remember one morning as I was walking our dog and spotting a helicopter circling in Philadelphia, and this just wasn't done in Philadelphia. It seemed very odd. I left for my 35-mile trip to East Central after picking up a couple of students who had spent the weekend at home, but nothing was said about the helicopter by either of them. I had almost forgotten the incident completely until one of my instructors asked what I'd done with the three young civil rights activists who were missing after visiting Philadelphia and other small towns in the area. They were apparently Northern college students who were helping to register blacks to vote.